Let's talk about new light on Sandy Koufax and his high holy day absence from the 1965 World Series. Before we do that, we have to talk about 1963. And in what was at the time considered to be a tight pennant race with the Cardinals, we see in the sporting news, and it's important, the news, I'm going to show a lot of this is going to be perception through the media. And, the sporting news at the time was the leading, print magazine newspaper, came out weekly, for baseball in particular. This is an era before Sports Illustrated that would come out in the 1970s. But this was really a baseball magazine. Religious intrusion. The Pirates are standing in a hole in this league with just the National League, with just their eyes showing almost unnoticed was the fact, the contest mathematically eliminated them from the pennants. All right. So the Pirates are not in contention. But it is the Cardinals the Dodgers want mathematically to eliminate, and the 1963 flag chase is moving toward next week's three-game climactic series, where even the mysterious ways of the Lord, that would be God, seem to be conspiring against the Dodgers. The great religious holiday, Rosh Hashanah, has intruded itself in the National League schedule. And as things stand now, Sandy Koufax either pitches against the Cardinals with 2 days rest, or Sandy Koufax doesn't pitch against the Cardinals at all. In fact, he did not. And in fact, the Dodgers won the pennant by 6 games. 2 days rest, now unconscionable. For baseball hurlers today, but generally the Dodgers operated with 4 days rest for their pitchers. They decided to move Koufax up a day to pitch against the Cardinals, so he still got his game in. They maneuvered the schedule, but in the end, there wasn't any fear, and because Mickey Mantle was injured that year, the Dodgers won the World Series. Yanks scheme to beat Dodgers petition shift of Yom Kippur. Everybody in town is happy, but I am out of a job. Sandy Koufax was named the outstanding player of the series and received a Corvette for being the most valuable player at the expense of a Ford. The Yankees promptly signed a petition demanding that Yom Kippur be celebrated the first week in October. Think that the only way to beat the Dodgers is to make sure that Koufax misses a start. Koufax and Ford wished each other luck. This is Whitey Ford, not Ford Motor Company, the Yankees' great pitcher. As they posed for the photograph for photographers before the game, this reminded me of Churchill and Stalin. Okay, but in the end, the Dodgers would beat them without Mantle and without Maris's home run bat of 1961. They were of no match for the now Los Angeles Dodgers. The columnist Jim Murray on Sandy Blasting. There must have been times the other night in Hillcrest Country Club when Sanford Koufax looked back longingly on the days. This is in the offseason of 1963 after he won the World Series, when all he had to face was the New York Yankees. Arrayed along the Dalles, confronting him, was the most feared lineup of freestyle insulters this side of a colony of fishwives who catch the old man drinking champagne out of a slipper with next month's rents. Sandy Koufax could have gotten the same kind of glowing tribute out of his fellow man by getting caught cheating in a crap game, shaking his fist at a truck driver, or stepping on an Irish cop's corns on a hot day. The comedian George Jessel did manage to identify him as, without question, this is the important line, the most important Hebrew athlete since Samson. But that was considered praise enough for one night, and Sandy was made thereafter to seem like the kind of guy whose picture, just move the zoom controls, whose picture you put in the post office and try to talk your sister out of marrying or even talking to on the streets. So Sandy Koufax, at a country club, not in Los Angeles, was, because his team was in Los Angeles, was seen as an imposter or somehow a turncoat against his own people being New Yorkers. But Sandy Koufax, but all in jest, Koufax was considered to be the great Jewish athlete of the time. Now, let's fast forward. That's background for 1965. Let's talk about 1965. The Dodgers had arguably the two best pitchers in baseball, both Hall of Famers. In fact, if you had to Google it really quickly, Don Drysdale had more wins than Sandy Koufax. His lifetime earned run average was still under three. I believe his was 2.95 and Koufax was 2.75. I am not at all suggesting, that would be anti-Semitic, that Don Drysdale was better than Sandy Koufax. I only want to posit before this very discerning group that Don Drysdale was no slouch, would have been one of the most well-known pitchers in baseball, won a Cy Young, not Sandy Koufax's three, but won a Cy Young, finished his career with more strikeouts. Now, of course, Koufax had a truncated career, but again, for the aficionados out there, anybody with an under three ERA outside the dead ball era is a Hall of Fame pitcher. And that's Don Drysdale. And that's really important. So let's interrogate what happens in 1965. So first of all, the Dodgers are the clear, they win the pennant by umpteen games. And they're playing, they're set to match up against the Minnesota Twins. Twins fired up by Dodgers sweep talk. So let's understand the anticipation before game one in October, early October of the 1965 World Series. Writing from the local newspaper, claims of National League superiority stirred up the local natives as Los Angeles Dodgers and Minnesota Twins prepared to go after baseball's juiciest plum today in the opening round of the 62nd World Series in Metropolitan Stadium. I hear they, that is the Dodgers, are popping off said Minnesota's big bopper, Hall of Famer Harmon Killebrew, who seldom loses his temper. I hear they say three or four clubs in the league can beat us and that the Dodgers are going to sweep us. Our guys are talking about it. I don't think it will help the Dodgers any. So fact number one, the Dodgers are the heavy betting favorite to smash the Minnesota Twins. Harmon Killebrew suggests otherwise, and in fact, it went to seven games. But number one, the Dodgers coming in were the heavy favorite. Number two, the forecast. Rain can mean sunshine for Sandy Koufax. The Associated Press reports, if the Dodgers play Minnesota in the World Series starting Wednesday, they naturally want to lead off with their pitching ace, Sandy Koufax, right? That's generally the rule of thumb. You start a series with your ace. You're pitching against their ace, their best pitcher. But Wednesday is Yom Kippur, a Jewish holy day, and Koufax is Jewish. In fact, he hadn't played on Rosh Hashanah. Yom Kippur usually is later, but Rosh Hashanah, he had deferred and rearranged the schedule to accommodate his Rosh Hashanah observance. What to do? From what I've been told, Koufax said, there are no dispensations for this particular day, religiously he's talking about. But then I haven't really talked about it to a rabbi. If we sew up the pennant, so this is, again, anticipation of playing the Minnesota Twins, not yet where they've done it. And it was a foregone conclusion. I plan to take it up and find out the proceedings. If I'm told it isn't proper to pitch, then I won't because I wouldn't feel right about it. Then Sandy added, I'm praying for rain Wednesday, and it was supposed to rain game one of the World Series. It has to rain. It would solve the whole matter. So fact number two, the betting odds were that it was going to rain game one of the World Series, and therefore it would obviate the entire issue. The World Series would be delayed, and Koufax would pitch the day after Yom Kippur. Fact number three pertains to Don Drysdale. I mentioned that the Dodgers pitched four starters. They did not, nowadays it's actually the playoffs is not so. Usually they shrink to four starters if they can sell it. But in that time, the Dodgers had four starters, meaning that every pitcher pitched every 4 days. Don Drysdale, who will pitch the first opening game of the World Series against the Minnesota Twins Wednesday, doesn't think his enforced 5 days of rest will affect his flinging. Big D was his nickname. Drysdale scored his fifth straight victory, so he was hot, with a 4-0 dazzler against the Milwaukee Brewers last Thursday, and would have pitched Sunday if necessary, but all he did on the final day of the season was warm up briefly on the sideline. The long layoff shouldn't hurt me, said the 23-game winner. When we won the pennant in 1963, I pitched the last Sunday against the Phillies and didn't pitch against the Yankees until the following Saturday. And when he did get a crack at the Bronx Bombers, he hurled a three-hit shutout to beat Jim Bouton 3-0. Fact number three, Don Drysdale was already overextended. Baseball is all about routine. Instead of pitching on 4 days rest, he would be pitching on 5 days rest by pitching game one of the World Series. If he had gone another day, it would have put him out of sync. It would have been 6 days rest. Again, Don Drysdale is no pitching slouch at all. So three facts that are really important about the myth of Sandy Koufax and Yom Kippur is, number one, nobody thought much of the Twins' chances. Number two, rain was in the forecast and there was a good chance the whole issue would be a non-issue. And number three, it would be advantageous to pitch Drysdale game one because he was already overextended, a long layoff in between starts. The Jewish press took note of it. So number one, I'm suggesting that based on all of this, that from a strategic point of view, slating Drysdale for game one of the World Series was the correct decision for the Dodgers. And therefore, nobody really thought too much of the decision to pitch Drysdale over Koufax in game one of the World Series for all of these three very important reasons. Number two, the second issue is the actual discussion in the Jewish press. So here, Koufax won't pitch opener, although there may not be much danger at the moment that the Dodgers will be playing in the World Series this year. If that should happen, Sandy Koufax has already made it known that he would not pitch the opening game, which falls on Yom Kippur. 2 years ago, when the Dodgers were in the stretch drive for the pennant, Sandy moved up one day in his pitching rotation to avoid playing on Rosh Hashanah. Baseball fans will recall that he won two games in the World Series that year and set a new record for strikeouts. So let's also pause. Maybe it's appropriate to call it a timeout for a second. Remember, they were the betting favorite. It was thought to be a sweep in four games, best of seven series. If in fact the World Series, which it did, go to seven games, so long as Sandy Koufax were to pitch either game one or game two, he would have an opportunity to pitch three games in the World Series. That's really, really important. A seven-game series, Sandy Koufax, as long as he pitched the first or second game, would have the opportunity to pitch three games in the World Series, giving the Dodgers their best chance to win. Interesting, right after the first game, in which Drysdale actually lost, and when he handed the ball off to his manager, Alston, reported, Jane Levy has this in, was first reported, I think, in Jane Levy's biography of Sandy Koufax. He tells the manager, I bet you wish I was Jewish too, because he had lost that game. Little bit faded, I'm sorry, but Abe Alchowitz, I don't know who he is, but except that he's a staff writer for the Minneapolis Star. He writes about his own experiences about sitting at Yom Kippur. Although I stayed away from work Wednesday, I did not go fishing. Yesterday was Yom Kippur, and the Jewish, make it a little bigger. In the Jewish religious calendar, that's the holiest day of the year. It was the day I think when Sandy Koufax stayed out of the pitcher's box in the year's first World Series in this year's first World Series baseball game at Metropolitan Stadium. I don't know anything about the Koufax background. I can recall considerable about mine. He goes on, does this writer to talk about his own experiences with sitting out the work part of the work week because of Yom Kippur. Let me just really quickly fix the slides. Resharing. So in Minnesota, and there's not really a powerful Jewish press yet in Los Angeles, there's not much discussion about Koufax sitting out one of the World Series. In fact, this writer is uninformed about the goings-on that happened for Koufax to miss the game. Another Jewish newspaper, Koufax spent the day in St. Paul's synagogue. This comes out already after the World Series is over. If you are wondering whether Sandy Koufax, who refused to pitch the opening game of the World Series because it fell out on Yom Kippur, spent his time in the synagogue or the dugout, you have the word of Rabbi Bernard S. Raskus of Conservative Temple of Aaron of St. Paul, because they were in Minnesota. For your information, Raskus told Post and Opinions, this is a paper out of Indianapolis, was a national Jewish newspaper, Mr. Sandy Koufax of the Los Angeles Dodgers was at the Temple of Aaron on Yom Kippur Day, and at no time during the day was he at the ballpark. But again, while this is newsworthy, I suppose, it comes out a week after Yom Kippur. It receives just a brief mention, and then it's not even the full article. It's just sort of a potpourri of facts in a column called Names in the News. I'm not suggesting that Koufax's decision not to play on Yom Kippur was altogether invisible. Certainly it received attention at the time, but I am suggesting that it weighs more heavily on us and was better known decades after the 1965 World Series. K is for Koufax, Sandy Koufax, last week complicated the task of American rabbis. They are having a difficult time these days convincing their congregants that K stands for kosher. To them, K stands for strikeouts. That's the symbol for a strikeout in a baseball scorecard. K stands for perfection. K stands for Koufax. We can remember 2 years ago when Los Angeles Dodgers were in the stretch drive in quest. Also, we had done this before. They had gone over this with 1963. Quest of the National League pennant, which they won. Sandy Koufax moved up one day in his pitching rotation so as not to pitch on Rosh Hashanah. That year, he won. He couldn't do that because, of course, the day before Yom Kippur was not the World Series. That year, he won two World Series games and set a new World Series strikeout record. Last week, we read the story in the Los Angeles Herald Examiner to the effect that even if the Dodgers win the pennant this year, Sandy Koufax would not pitch the opening game. It falls on Yom Kippur. A few days later, Sandy pitched a perfect game, that rarest of jewels for major league pitchers. Now, we don't know if there's any correlation between the incidents, but a sermonizing rabbi could certainly make out a good case for it, and he could throw in a reminder to his flock, that is a rabbi, that a perfect game is like a rabbi having a standing room only sanctuary on Shabbos. Either way, they were having fun with it, was the Jewish press, but there wasn't really talk about Jewish identity and things that in the tropes now about Koufax's decision to set out about Jewish identity in modern America. Those types of tropes that scream out Jewish exceptionalism in the United States were not really apparent at the moment in 1965. There is, though, a very interesting story, little known. In a report in the Minneapolis newspapers, two great names in baseball met during World Series held in our towns recently. The Two were Sandy Koufax and a guy named Feller. After checking out this meeting, I learned it wasn't Bob Feller, the former pitching great of the Cleveland Indians, but Rabbi Moshe Feller, regional director of Merkos Leinei Chinuch, Leinoi Chinuch, Leinyanei, excuse me, Chinuch, educational arm of the Lubavitcher Hasidic Menachem Chabad Rabbi. Rabbi Feller paid a visit to, what do Chabad rabbis do best? Rabbi Feller paid a visit to Sandy's St. Paul Hotel the day after Yom Kippur to give congratulations for the great assist he gave rabbis and the Jewish educators of the world over. So Rabbi Feller had anticipated what that moment would mean for American Jews, or North American Jews. Of course, Canada has a baseball team. By not playing on the Day of Atonement. Sandy informed the rabbi that he never played on the High Holy Days and that this act was not new for him, not new business for him. Feller presented the star pitcher with a handsome pair of tefillin. Koufax accepted the tefillin graciously, commenting on their beauty. He chuckled when Feller told him that he had difficulty in deciding whether he should give him a right-handed or left-handed tefillin. Jewish law states that hand tefillin must be donned on the weaker arm. The rabbi told Koufax, since you bat right and throw left, that only recently do National League pitchers not bat, I couldn't figure out what type to get you, but considering that your left arm has accomplished, I decided to give that your right arm was the weaker arm. So here you have it. And it's only reported, I think, in Chabad circles. I don't think Jane Levy has it in her biography of Koufax. Little known is that the immediate Jewish reward for not pitching on Yom Kippur was that a Chabad rabbi in Minneapolis, Minnesota, where right after game one of the World Series loss by the Dodgers to the Minnesota Twins and Harlan Killebrew, Sandy Koufax was gifted a pair of tefillin, and the rabbi paskened that he was, in fact, officially a lefty. Now, other Jewish press, didn't we all get a lift when Dodgers pitcher Sandy Koufax had his World Series pitching rotation changed so he could observe the High Holidays? So again, it's not invisible, but this, in its time, didn't we all get a lift, really, really does not do well to anticipate how important Sandy Koufax's decision was to sit out game one of the World Series. Remember, Koufax pitched game two. Don Drysdale was a future Hall of Famer. Down 0-1, Koufax outs an even series against Twins caught today. And in fact, he loses. Sandy loses, but there's a catch to it. Sandy Koufax refused an alibi for his 5-1 loss. Giving up 5 runs is a big deal for Koufax, to the Minnesota Twins in the second game of the World Series Thursday. No, the cold weather didn't bother me, said Koufax. I pitched and had good stuff on colder days. No, the park had nothing to do with it, nor the rain, nor the long layoff. I knew, remember, doesn't blame the fact that he missed a start. I knew what I had wanted to do out there, but I just couldn't do it. If I had a little better control or better stuff, I might have gotten away with it. So they're down 2-0 to the upstart Minnesota Twins. What does he do? Drysdale wins, and then Twins meet the real Koufax, 0, and he shuts out the Minnesota Twins in his next start. Sandy's next paper on the right side, Sandy's the greatest, Dodgers win it. Alston, manager, who may or may not have wanted Drysdale to be Jewish too in game one, leans to left, clever title, and Koufax proves he's right, 2-0. And so Koufax throws, after losing game one, clunker by his standards, wins 2 more games of the World Series, including game 7. He shuts out the Twins, and the Los Angeles Dodgers win the World Series. Again, strategically, it made sense that so long as he could pitch game one or game two, Koufax would have an opportunity to redeem himself by pitching 2 more times in the World Series. So here's the celebration of Kovacs. And so after 9 days and roughly $3 million worth of ticket business, so it was still pretty good business, the thing came blessedly to an end. What began as Black Yom Kippur for the Dodgers concluded in an orgy of champagne. They won an altogether goofy series whose games never went more than 8 1/2 innings until the last day. Never have two teams shown such glaring distaste for each other's property. And were it not for one little burst of two runs in the fourth inning of the final game, Sandy Koufax may have been turning to Hertz to put him behind the driver's seat of a 1966, meaning to rent a car, instead of winning what he was dutifully his, because winning MVP a second time, I think he's the only person to ever win two World Series MVPs, to win a 1966 Corvette convertible, which Sandy was awarded by a magazine as the series' outstanding player. A press box philosopher observed, he can use the Corvette to stand on when he washes his Rolls Royce. Earlier, the sports pages reported Newsweek. Earlier, the Brooklyn Dodgers bonus boy, he received $14,000 in 1955, a signing bonus for being drafted, fought past the discouragement of a rib tumor in 1958. Wildness that took him to the brink of retirement in 1960, and a blood clot that almost required amputation of his left index finger in 1962. I can't make up my mind, the Jewish star once mused, that's Koufax, whether I'm a Schlemiel, this is way before Laverne and Shirley, whether I'm a Schlemiel or a Schlemazel. The Schlemiel carries a plate of soup and always spills it. The Schlemazel is the guy who spills, he spills it on. I guess I'm the kind of guy something is always going to happen to. So Koufax is obviously Jewish and wears that identity on his sleeve. Again, way into the offseason, now in October 1965, AJTA, this is a Jewish Telegraphic Agency, so a Jewish columnist, now they all say Sandy Koufax is the greatest. The accolades for Sandy Koufax continue to pour in. Players and sports writers can't seem to say enough about Sandy, both as a pitcher and as a man, says Dodgers manager Walt Alston. I haven't seen all the great pitchers, but I've seen all of the great ones of the last 25 years. Koufax tops them all. He's a superb workman. So again, I never want to suggest that Drysdale was better than Koufax. A fine team man. One of the reasons you have to consider his work superb is that, like all of our pitchers, he had little margin to work on any time. I mean, they weren't such a good hitting team. Often, he had to pitch a shutout to be sure of victory. Clark Nielsen, writing in the Houston Post, and in these rankings, the greatest thing of all about Sandy Koufax is that so much personal grace is wrapped up in the same package with so much talent. This guy fits the image of a modest Hall of Famer as well as it ever has been fitted. Can there be any doubt he'll be in Cooperstown, which is the site of the Baseball Hall of Fame? Oops, sorry about that. In a recent mailbag article in the St. Paul, Dispatch, Baker lashed out at the local sports writers that commented on Sandy Koufax and his not pitching on the opening day of the World Series. So this is a twist in the moment about his decision about whether to play in Yom Kippur. His article first attacked Bob Fowler of the Minneapolis Tribune. He quoted Fowler as saying, if Wednesday was a day of atonement, which was Yom Kippur that year, I think October 2nd, for Sanford Koufax, Thursday was a day of reckoning. He lost 5-1. Baker said, I believe it a terrible shame when writers such as Don Riley of the St. Paul Dispatch and Bob Fowler of the Minneapolis Tribune staff, only to mention a couple of many, tend to make a mockery out of it. So there was the immediate Jewish reaction to Koufax's decision is not based on Jewish pride per se, but it's actually a way of responding to what was perceived as some type of subtle anti-Semitism. If these gentlemen think they are being funny, maybe they ought to try partaking in their own religious beliefs more often. He added that when the time comes that a person gets ridiculed for praying to God in his own way, then we can question living in a democracy. Let's leave religion and matzo balls out of America's favorite pastime. The newspaper reported supported Riley and said they were certain neither writer intended any religious slur or any criticism of Koufax for practicing religion. So I can't understate that enough. The Jewishness of October 1965 did not come we weren't washed over with Jewish pride, but to the contrary, the immediate media reaction was to somehow stymie any lurking rhetoric pertaining to anti-Semitism. Here, rigors of baseball ended. Sandy relaxes. Sandy Koufax, baseball artisan with the $1 million pitching arm back then, still is, but back then particularly $1 million went a long way, loads his golf clubs into his car for a well-deserved vacation after pitching Los Angeles Dodgers to a 2-0 victory over the Minnesota Twins in the final and deciding game of the 1965 World Series at Metropolitan Stadium. The fabulous left-handed hurler, winner of virtually every conceivable honor by a pitcher in the major leagues, seeks relaxation from a rigorous baseball schedule during which he won 26 games, including 8 shutouts. Understand that. Winning 26 games, 8 of them by complete game shutouts, is unfathomable. He also pitched 2 more shutouts and victories in the World Series after his clunker in Game 1, which is just absolutely astounding that he would have done that in Game 2. Koufax, who declined to pitch the World Series, so there is some mention in the Jewish press. Koufax, who declined to pitch the World Series opener on October 6th, and in parentheses, Yom Kippur was a parenthetical point, literally, instead reportedly attended services at a synagogue in the Twin Cities. And in elsewhere, this is in Chicago in the Jewish press, again, in sort of a about-town sort of column off the record by Bob Gale, members of the Orthodox community. So again, this is about a message that he thought resonated with just about 6 to 8% of the Jewish community in America at that time, many of whom had never read a sports page. I don't know if that's true. Suddenly became interested in the Dodgers Twins World Series game, especially when Sandy Koufax pitched and won the last one. The fact that he didn't play on Yom Kippur and attended services instead intrigued them. In other words, Koufax's decision was some sort of orthodox decision. That just off the cuff, here Bob Gale suggests that it was a token move to the religious, so-called religious, Orthodox community. But in fact, Koufax's decision didn't make him any more Jewish or a Jewish celebrity than he had been prior to that. So at least there we have a lot of comments. And I'll confess that I was born 20 years after this moment. So people's records, always dangerous to speak about people who are still alive, but certainly people who likely their childhood. I've done violence to their recollection. So I anticipate having a discussion here, and I wanted to leave a good 15 minutes for that for discussion. But what I'm arguing isn't that certainly that Koufax was heroic and did much for the self-esteem and the self-confidence of the Jewish community in the United States and elsewhere by deciding not to pitch on Yom Kippur Game 1 of the World Series. Again, to summarize, I point out that strategically it made good sense to pencil in Don Drysdale. He was not at all a slouch, had won the 1962 Cy Young Award, and in fact, it was supposed to rain on Game 1, which would have literally washed away the entire issue. And then, of course, the Dodgers really did not respect the athletic aptitude of the Minnesota Twins, so they thought it would be a non-issue anyway. The fourth reason is very important. So long as he pitched Game 1 or Game 2, the Dodgers would have a contingency plan to pitch Koufax in the all-important Game 7 of the World Series. That's number one. Number two is that the Jewish community, if they did pay attention, I don't want to suggest that it was invisible. In fact, I've looked at sermon manuals, thinking that some rabbi would have published in the rabbinical assembly or the RCA, the Rabbinical Council of America, or the CCAR, Central Conference of American Rabbis. So somebody published a Koufax sermon at that time. Wasn't there. So while it registered, it really became, it really is the myth. I don't mean myth like it didn't happen. It certainly happened. He received a pair of tefillin, which is a nugget. I did promise something new, which maybe some of you did not know. Was visited by a Chabad Shliach after the game and got a pair of lefty tefillin. But while it was important, it took on a new stature of importance in the American, North American Jewish imagination in the later 1980s, 1990s, when so-called identity politics took force. This is the age of the moral majority and Jerry Falwell in the 1980s, for example. And so if you're looking at a reception history, I can point to a number of newspapers that recall it, call Koufax's decision in order to demonstrate America's place as a foundational religious group in the United States. It's then that it takes on new meaning. At the time, the most compelling argument pertaining to Koufax's decision not to play actually had to do to beat down subtle anti-Semitism. That how could you fault Koufax for his Jewishness? We in America are allowed to be Jewish. Koufax represents that. But then again, I'm arguing that is responding to anti-Semitism, which is in some sense different than actively leveraging it, using the story to exercise muscle relating to Jewish self-confidence and Jewish pride. But certainly, I can tell you, if I'm guilty of American Jewish sacrilege, I can tell you that on a family trip to Cooperstown, my children dutifully stood in front of Koufax's plaque at the Baseball Hall of Fame. If I could afford it, I would buy my aspiring card collector son a Koufax rookie card. And and my son did attend a Dodger game last summer. Their best pitcher now isn't Jewish. It's maybe the greatest baseball player to ever live, Shohei Ohtani. We'll see when it's all said and done. In any case, that's my story, and I'm sticking to it, I guess, although that's a phrase from the 70s, not the 60s. But happy to engage in any conversation. I'm sure there may be some rebuttals. I did not mean to do violence, but I wanted to share some newspaper reporting from the time.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, yes. Yeah, so I'm looking at the comments. Great. All fun of Huzara. Okay. Braves moved to Atlanta from walking. So it was. So I was right. It is. It was the Milwaukee Braves, not the Milwaukee Brewers. Okay. Thank you very much, Deborah, for pointing that out. Sharon asks me if I've ever heard of a Zach Hyman. He was a star with the Edmonton. I probably would have known. I know the name a little bit. I'm not a hockey fan. I really grew up in Baltimore. And so, you know, my heart broke with the Ravens this year. But thank goodness for the Orioles, with the baby birds, this coming year. This is not a plug, certainly. I did write a book. It was my COVID project, called Dyed in Crimson, which is the first account that I found of a major Jewish superstar, Arnold Harwin. It's a book about how a Protestant Catholic and a Jew saved Harvard from itself, won the Rose Bowl in 1920, and then coached the team. It's not a plug because the amount of royalties I get if somebody purchases it on Amazon is quite small. It was a fun book to write, and it got me thinking a lot about this. Is because I'm less interested in, you know, Bernard Postel wrote a big biography that was every bar mitzvah gift for a decade or two on a Jewish encyclopedia of sports players. I'm less interested in if somebody, and this, Shannon, is not what you're suggesting at all, just pointing it out, is I'm interested about what American Jews gleaned, right? The fact that Koufax was a Jew is less important to me than how the Jewish community rallied around him, how they made meaning out of Kovacs or Hank Greenberg, for example. So this story that I write about in the 1920s is about how Jews really did rally around Arnold Harwin. The fact that very few of you, unless you've read the book, know about Arnold Harwin has much to do with Harvard's lack of success after Harwin in football, and also the role of college football compared to professional sports thereafter. Although there is an interesting juxtaposition, the day Harwin retired was the same day that the sports pages reported that the Tigers had called up Hank Greenberg from the Piedmont League, which was quite interesting. I don't know if God meant it. Maybe it's proof that God's an ironic baseball fan. I think I have that set of that. So the baseball set of, yeah, it's interesting. No rebuttals? I purposely wanted to leave a few minutes. Okay, I didn't do violence to anybody's childhood. I'm glad. again, Koufax, one of the great Jewish players, great ambassador for Jewish identity for all of us. There's no question about it. Did not mean for this to be a myth buster of a lecture, but really to understand the role that the media and commentary play. And just when we think about Koufax, what happened in its moment, and there's myths have interesting histories, and they are conjured up by storytellers, and it says much about who the storytellers are at any moment in time. And so the Koufax, the lack of a Yom Kippur game for Koufax, really emerged much later on. Greenberg, I know, he sat out. He didn't. There was a lot of pressure on him. He came from an Orthodox family, did Greenberg. So he changed his mind several times over. In the end, Hank Greenberg, he did good by us. Anyway, everybody.
Could I ask a question right away? I'm curious. Unfortunately, the Zoom isn't my wife's name. So I'm the one that asked the question about Zach Hyman. And the rest of the question was what I really wanted, and that's it. I once watched a TV show which was a form of Jewish baseball players. And what struck me is that we were not, they didn't have very strong Jewish backgrounds. And I was wondering if there were anyone that had like strong Jewish backgrounds that made.
That's an interesting question. So, yeah, I think Hank Greenberg.
There is, I think, a similar type of picture now in the minor league.
No, Hank Greenberg would be your best bet way is he was raised, but I don't think, I think it's proven that it's hard to commit to the regimen to prepare for baseball and be Shomer Shabbat. I think that's just one of the things that it is. You know, Ryan Terrell notwithstanding, that's basketball. Yeah, no, it's an interesting question. I don't know of it, but maybe one day. In any case, everybody, same bad time, same bad channel, and we'll find something fun to talk about next week. Have a good day.
Thank you.
My absolute pleasure, everybody.